Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Black. Black, black, black. Black on black, black. Yeah, hey. Okay, black, 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 black on black, black, my thoughts so black, black, black on black, my skin is so black, I'm rocking that black on black is black.
Black rims on this black, black wheels in this black, black wheel with this black bitch, black. So black on black.
How black, black are you? Have you ever had your blackness questioned? Have you ever questioned someone else's blackness? What does that even mean? Did you ever say, take my black card because you don't fit a black stereotype because perhaps you haven't seen a movie like The Color Purple? Well, actor Alfonso Ribeiro, also known as Carlton Banks, from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air sitcom, said he felt ostracized from the black community because of typecasting. Quote, I never am going to be white. And I'm never going to be fully supported in the black house. We're exploring this very provocative subject tonight with Damon Young, culture critic and author of the book, What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. I want to hear from our listeners tonight as well. Lines are open. Give us a call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Damon, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Should I, now, here's my question. So do I call you brother or brother, B-R-O-T-H-A?
Damon is fine.
Okay.
Damon is fine.
Because is one of those blacker?
I mean, Damon is pretty sufficiently black. I mean, Damon is black enough.
Are you sure? I think so.
You don't. I haven't met too many white Damons. I mean, they're you don't really meet that many Damons, but. I think I could think of maybe three white Damons, and one of them played for Indiana basketball team back in like the 1990s, Damon Bailey. But I can't think of too many white Damons. So
yeah, Damon, but see, he played basketball.
Yeah, again, boom.
See,
there you go.
See, there it is.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this because, you know, Ribeiro, I think he makes in an interesting point. And do you think that he's right?
No, I don't think he's right. I'm trying to find the interesting part of the point that he was trying to make. I think that, I mean, this is the most that I've thought about him and since the Fresh Prince last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone was thinking, okay, yes, Carlton ain't black. Carlton can't come to black stuff because of his white wife. I mean, if that were a qualification or deal breaker to not be able to be included in like black award shows or, you know, BET stuff or whatever, we're talking like half the NFL wouldn't be there either. All right. And half the entertainment industry. If okay, well, you have a non-black significant other, then you can't come. Well, then the seats are going to be half full then.
But he's not necessarily talking just about his significant other. He's talking about his character and being typecast because the character is Carlton loved Tom Jones. You know, he was always ridiculed by Will's character as what we would, you know, being swagless, which is what we would call it, you know, now, the whole bit. And I think that that's his point, that he was being typecast. And so, and that's the point that I think he was making. That's the thing that I think is interesting because he was playing a character, but that he perhaps played the character so well that people believe that that is who he was.
I mean, I agree, you know, in terms of maybe trying to get other jobs and acting, that the association for Carlton was probably so strong that that made that very difficult for him. But, you know, you could also look at a person like Jaleel White, who, you know, probably even had an even stronger association with being Steve Urkel, you know, being nerdy, being, you know, socially awkward or whatever. And from what I understand, Jaleel White is still, you know, he's still a part. He's still, I haven't heard Jaleel White come out and say, oh, people don't mess with me now because they still think of Urkel. And they think of me and they think of Urkel. And I think, you know, unfortunately, Alfonso is doing a thing that many people do where you think the worst possible. You do not give black audiences and black people the benefit of the doubt. And I think that, yes, of course, we recognize that this is the character that you're playing. And so what ends up happening is a bit of a confirmation bias thing happens where he perhaps goes into situations thinking, okay, people are going to think of me as Carlton. People are not going to accept me. People are going to think that I want to be white or that I'm acting white. And so, and when you feel that way, then you just look for data that confirms how you already want to feel.
But outside of high profile actors, let's just talk about black people. How do you define blackness? Because I think that's, you know, that's the piece that is really important. And as I said, when you're talking about anything from education, this is about education, this is about class, this is, in some ways, it's about economics, it's about geography. Are you less black because you grew up in California and you may have no connection to the struggles of Southern slavery, like those people, like the black folks who were born and raised in South Carolina or Georgia or Florida or North Carolina? And they may not necessarily, they may have three generations of folks who lived in LA. Are those folks less black? Are you less black because you don't like chitlins? Okay. Are you less black because you prefer jazz to hip hop? Are you less black because your grammar is more pristine than others? And I think that's, you know, that's the thing. Are you less black because you get to places on time? That's not a joke.
I think
people question that.
I think that the people who do, you know, make those sort of determinations are people who think of blackness and black people in the worst possible way, and that includes white people too. And I'm not going to deny that there are black people who have been teased, you know, you maybe come from a certain neighborhood, or maybe you have a certain accent, or maybe you have a certain occupation or a certain significant other or whatever, certain interests, you know, that have been teased, you know, or whatever. But, you know, kids get teased, adults get teased. And I think that this whole dynamic of black people being shunned for being less black is, I feel like we're making a mountain out of a molehill, because I just, you know, I've been teased when I was a kid. I've been teased for having, you know, for being smart or whatever. Not for being smart, but for getting good grades. But at the same time, I was teased for other stuff that kids are teased for. But it wasn't like, oh, we're teasing you and we're ostracizing you. It was just like, oh, we're just ribbing you. And that's that. But at the same time, it's like, okay, we recognize that this kid has some academic talent, has some athletic talent, and we're going to try to nurture and protect that.
I disagree with that.
And I grew up in a hood.
I disagree with that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about blackness. How is it defined? Are there degrees of blackness? Who determines that? What do you think? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to know what you have to say. Renee, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. This is a long overdue topic.
Okay.
Because it is a there's a clear and precise division almost. If you, I mean, you're just instantly, as soon as you open your mouth, you are immediately almost ostracized. You're outside of the black culture. I've been called, and I hope this isn't going to get beeped, but a black cracker. I don't know, you know, if
speak
that's...
Speak your mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it's basically, you know, I grew up right here in Fairmont Heights, Maryland, and I grew up, bused to a white school, and then I moved to California. And so over time, you know, you just changed your articulation, I guess. I don't know. It's just bizarre that because you speak a different way, that you are considered not black enough. You're not really a black person, or you're trying to talk white, or you're, you know, just because you can, you know, compose a sentence. It's almost hurtful sometimes.
Yeah.
Even from within my own family, or within my, you know, my grandmother used to say, "Oh, you're Siddiddy. You're Siddiddy." I don't even know what that means, but you know, it's a thing. It really is, and it's very prominent in the black community.
Yeah.
So glad you're having this conversation. Thank you, Harold.
Renee, thank you so much. You see, Damon, that's what I'm talking about. Now, see, for yourself, you just said that, you know, kids get teased, adults get teased, but in your case, you were recognized for your athletic prowess as well as for your intelligence, and someone or someone's plural said, yeah, let's develop this. Renee's point is that not everyone had the blessing of someone saying, let's develop this. And as we have seen in many of our underserved communities, at times, no one develops that. And so what happens, young people, children, when they are teased for having the ability to speak well based on what their parents are telling them, then they will suppress that. Getting good grades because they may have a natural talent, but because that peer pressure not to do that, and that's another question, where does that come from? They don't do it, and so they, and you know this, they decide to fall behind because of peer pressure instead of moving forward because... you know, the better angels of our nature, i.e. teachers and intelligent, supportive adults, say, let's support that. That's what she's talking about. That's my point.
No, I understand what you're saying, and I understand what she's saying. I'm just not going to pathologize blackness and act as if blackness...
And it shouldn't be.
Culture,
no, I get it. Yeah.
You know, and black people and black culture have this, you know, pathological distaste for education, for grammar, for English. Like, even as Renee was speaking, you know, talking about how she was, you know, perhaps teased for speaking properly or whatever, I was just thinking in my head of actors and actresses like Angela Bassett and Courtney B. Vance and Joe Morton and even going back to, like, James Baldwin, Maya Angelou. And these are people who spoke the Queen's English.
Mm-hmm.
Who speak the Queen's English, who speak extremely, their diction is perfect.
Yes,
their
pristine.
Enunciation is perfect. And no one ever has accused, you know, Viola Davis of acting white because she speaks the way that she speaks. And so, again, I think that we can find examples. Of course, we could find examples of people who were teased, you know, when they were kids or maybe called uppity or sedity or bougie or whatever as adults. But again, I think that by making that the standard, you know, we pathologize blackness and black people. And again, my heart is out to anyone who had felt like they've had to suppress or flatten themselves in order to fit in. But again, also want to say that that's not unique to black people either. You know, teasing's not unique to blackness. Being teased for being quote-unquote nerdy, that's not unique to blackness. And again, I hate when these conversations happen because it makes it seem like we are, like, uniquely anti-education, uniquely anti, you know, grammar, uniquely anti-enunciation, and that's not the truth.
I would hope not. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about blackness. How black are you? How is that defined? And have you ever questioned someone's blackness, skin tone, because of your dark skin? Does that make your blackness better than someone who is considerably lighter than you? That's a colorism thing. Your speech, where you went to school. Are you blacker because you went to an HBCU? There were some places in this country where you are blacker because you didn't go to college. We're talking about all of that. Emmanuel calling from Rockville, Freddie calling from Virginia, Vaughn calling from Northwest DC. Do not hang up. We're going to talk to you. You can hear the program through the phone, so please do not hang up. I love this conversation. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2. Don't forget to download the app on your smartphone. You can hear the program in its entirety, the entire hour. And don't forget also on 98.3 FM. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about blackness. What is that? How is it defined? Has anyone ever questioned your blackness? Have you questioned someone's blackness? And what right might you or anyone have to question your blackness? Well, yeah, it's provocative. There's definitely a lot to be said about this question. My guest tonight is Damon Young. He is a culture critic and author of What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Let's go to Freddie calling from Virginia. What's on your mind, Freddie?
Okay.
Keep it short. Keep it short.
Right now is on my mind.
Keep it short.
Okay, so first thing first, I was born to two black parents, even though I have features where I look more Indian. I have very long hair. People look at me and they say, well, you look more Indian.
Mm-hmm.
So, recently, I'm an officer in Texas, but I went and tried to get my license in D.C. as officer. So we in the class with the sergeant or whatever, and the women that was also in the class with me, they walked out, and he's like, man, these women are busted and disgusted. They raggedy looking. I said, I don't know where they come from. I said, presentation is important. So I always came to the academy. I had on the dress and stockings. Sometimes I might be getting an off from somewhere. Presentation is just so important. It doesn't matter where you're going in life. And, you know,
Freddie, I need you to keep it short. I got a lot of folks on the phone.
They were just trying to inquire. I wasn't from the hood.
Okay.
They ended up telling me that I was a white lady. They said, you're a white lady.
How did you feel
and,
about
we
that?
Ended up getting into, I don't know, because I dress up. I carry myself a certain way. And we ended up getting into almost a fight. And he said, never in my life did I ever have a fight in my academy. And I'm just like, well, don't be calling me no white lady. I can be just as hood as you. Just don't do that. You know, it's just a, you know. But end of the story, I really didn't finish the class because I almost got into a serious fight in the academy, long story short. And I'm just going to end it with it saying, presentation is everything. work with what you got, whether you got it or not. Put a wig on, put some makeup on, just present yourself, and you go farther. It's not about trying to be white or who wants to be white. Present yourself.
I see. Okay, Freddie, thank you so much. Let's go to Vaughn, calling from Northwest D.C. What's on your mind, Vaughn? Thanks for calling.
I'd just like to say that, you know, the subject that you're talking about is very real. I experienced it younger, you know, and I was teased about it. But, you know, it's something that needs to be spoke upon. You know what I'm saying? It's not as much in every community, but it's there. You know what I'm saying? At one point in time, you're not black enough by, you know, the way you talk, or, you know, the accent which, or the slang that you say. You know, at one point in time, like the brother said, you know, if you got two good grades, you were too, you know, you weren't as black enough. I remember getting teased by white kids because I got better grades than them. So they said I wasn't black. You know what I'm saying? I caught it both ways, Harold. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's just something that needs to be spoke upon. And I think we had a better place than we were. You know, I'm 40-some years old, so 20 years ago, you know, even when I was in elementary school, you know, but it's real.
Yeah.
And it's definitely there, you know what I'm saying?
I agree with you. Thank you so much, Vaughn. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Emmanuel calling from Rockville. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Always a good show. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing.
I just give you this scenario where I had left the hood in the northeast part of the District of Columbia, then I moved to Rockville, Maryland, and I was out in the area for a little while, and we, you know, came back to visit in D.C., and, you know, some of the brothers that I used to hang with, you know, labeled me as, you know, one of the white boys because I lived in a particular part of Maryland. But I'm just like the guest who's on the radio. I don't look at it as negative or anything like that. I look at it as brothers are afraid of change, or somebody's afraid of change. Because you can stereotype me. I'm the same person that you grew up with and came from the same neighborhood. I haven't changed. The only thing I've changed is I wanted to do something different and better myself. And that's why people, you know, put that stigma on you, or put that, you know, that label on you as you act white, or your white look, you know, your white acting and stuff like that. So I don't really even pay much attention to that. I just look at it, brother, afraid of things, or sisters afraid of things.
Okay. Emmanuel, thank you so much. Emmanuel brings up a really good point, Damon, and I wanted to bring this to your attention. So what about the young people who may be raised in all black communities? So those black communities that may have, you know, some of the foundational things that we may consider, you know, black, where you may have parents that are Southern, okay? Yeah, that's, you know, that we know that's a D.C. thing. If you're born, you know, you were born and raised in D.C., it's very likely, although not always, but it's likely that your parents may have, you know, come from the South. They may or may not have a college education or what have you, but let's say for the sake of argument that they do not. And you are the first in your community to go to college. So you go away to college, and you don't go to an HBCU. You may go to a Cornell, or you may go to a UCLA or a Texas Tech or Virginia Tech or someplace like that. You go away to the University of Maryland. But then you come back, and you have, some say you have changed, some say you have grown. And then you may be ostracized for the change or the growth, okay? Is that, how would you recommend that someone deal with that? Because in your mind, you are the same black person in some ways. You remember where you came from. You're the same black person who left that community. It's just that you know more because now you've got an education. But you still love your mom and your dad and your grandparents and your friends that you that you left and you came back to. But now they are looking at you sideways because now you are different. You are changed. How would you recommend that that different, changed person deal with people who are now ostracizing them?
I mean, when we say ostracize, what do you mean?
Like, in other words,
they're not allowed to cook out. They're not allowed to. They get kicked off of Facebook what does that mean?
That's exactly what I mean. In other words, you know, they say that you've changed. You know, well, you come back and no, you're no longer eating things cooked in Crisco oil because you say, well, yeah, that's healthy. No, I'm not doing the soul food because. You know, we've got this thing called high blood pressure, diabetes, and all of this other kind of stuff that your family is still because of the way that they eat and the way that, you know, those are those cultural things. We have those conversations on this program all the time. But now that, you know, you've got yourself a little education or maybe even a lot, and you have decided, no, you're going to become a vegetarian. Or you're going to become a vegan, or something like.
I mean, I think
now you and I know that that's not a white thing, but the folks that you left behind may not.
Yeah, I think there's a difference, and I think we might be conflating. Okay, so yeah, you get back home and you might have changed, and people may have recognized that change, and I don't think that there's a problem with articulating that, and I think there's a difference between articulating, oh, you're a little different. There's a difference between doing that and saying, hey, you're not welcome here anymore. And the former is something that happens all the time when you go away. I mean, when I came back from college after my first semester, my parents noticed a change and teased me about it and joked with me about it and were annoyed with some parts of it. But in terms of being ostracized, like, hey, you're vegan now, so you're not allowed in this home anymore. Like, I doubt that happens at a frequency enough to be worried about it. And if that legitimately happens where you come back home and there are a couple people who are like, you know what, I don't want you around here no more, then that just lets you know that these are people that you don't need to have in your life anymore. I think that what we're talking about is exceptions. You know, the reality and the majority of people, Black people, might just say, oh, might joke with you about, oh, you don't like fried chicken anymore or whatever, might joke with you about it, but you're still a part of family. You're still a part of the community. You're still able to come and partake, and you're still welcome, you know. So, yeah, I just don't see the ostracization happening at a rate that warrants conversation about it.
And certainly, this is anecdotally speaking.
Yeah.
But again, it really depends. I can speak in my own personal experience. Yeah, I went to school, but then again, I was second generation HBCU, my daughter's third generation HBCU. But because of what I do for a living, yes. How many times has my Blackness been questioned? You know, you can't get any, in my mind, you can't get any blacker than Howard Morgan Howard. You know?
Yeah.
But it has happened. And I'm talking about, you know, in my family. Like, so, and yet, and then there, you know, there's someone, you know, very, very close to me, first person in her family to go to college and no support whatsoever when she went to college. None whatsoever. And while not ostracized, the reaction was borderline hostility because she sought to better herself. So, and this is a Black family. I don't know. Something to think about. Let's think about what William has to say. William, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, William. What's on your mind?
I was just thinking, I went through the same thing growing up, being able to, you know, speak. You know, I stood up in church introducing myself one time when I was visiting a friend, and after I finished, they were kind of laughing, telling me, you sounded like a white person. And so I think in our community, we really have to start celebrating are lawyers, doctors, engineers, scientists, business people, and just do it more and more. And as much as we celebrate our sports people and things of that nature, but we, in our music people, we really have to celebrate all these other disciplines, and whether it's in the movies, talk about it in our churches, talk about it more in our schools. So it becomes normalized because more and more of us are doing these other things, getting with our education, yet we're still in 2021, you know, dealing with you sound a certain way.
I agree with that. I really do agree with that because, you know, black people are bigger than the traditional pursuits that that we have done. And even those pursuits, those high profile professional pursuits, because at some point, and I remember what during this cicada craziness that we went through, there was a young black man who had been interviewed ad nauseum on local television. He was an expert in insects. And I was fascinated because not only was he brilliant, but he was also interesting. And I found myself thinking, wow, black people do that too, huh? And I think
exactly.
That's that's what William, I think that's the point that you're making, if I'm not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. William, thank you so much for that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Raheem calling from DC. Raheem, I just want to joke with you because I almost want to say, Raheem, that's not a white name.
And believe it or not, I was born of African American mother and father, and taught to pray by a Christian woman, and today I happen to be Muslim.
See, for some reason I have no reason not to believe that. Thank you. What's on your mind?
And so here's what's on my mind. I had the same experience, but I guess my travel was differently. I left Southeast DC and I went off to college in Alabama. And I came back.
Where in Alabama?
In Huntsville, Alabama.
Alabama A&M?
That's correct.
I used to live there. I used to work for Channel 19. Go right ahead.
Is that right? Okay. So when I came back, let me define blackness. Blackness is defined by consciousness and culture.
Says who?
And so when you are educated, if you become bilingual, meaning that I spoke one way when I was in college, in campus, or in my classes. When I came back to Benin Road at Spingarn in front of the pool room, I spoke street, and I was understood and appreciated. So never was I ostracized. As a matter of fact, the community that I came from, I was looked upon with high regard because I had done something different that was not of the norm. I think the mistake that's made when so many people begin to, I think the caller, your guest, or somebody named several successful, iconic actors and actresses and talked about the articulation and how eloquent they were and their command of the English language. But what they failed to realize is each one of those that they name a high regard for their consciousness and respecting their culture and the manner in which they conduct themselves. And so I think that if you've had an issue of being accused of not being black enough, then maybe you should kind of look in the mirror and ask yourself in your pursuit of your education and where you live and the things that you've afforded your children, have I missed the important thing, the experience of being black and what that looked like? And no, I no longer eat pork. I don't eat fried food and all of that. And as a result of that, you can count on one hand the number of people, because my mama got to the point that she stopped putting fat back in the green.
But hold on, Raheem. I have to stop you here, because I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you at all.
Okay.
Because let's take Candace Owens, the ultra conservative Trump supporter. Okay. I don't agree with anything this woman says. But the one thing that I will say about her is that she is a black woman.
And that's it.
Right. But you just tried to define blackness as it relates to culture and all of this other stuff.
And consciousness.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Conscious. So she, as far as I'm concerned, she's unconscious.
And I agree with you.
But so she's still a black woman.
But she's only black in terms of her ethnic.
Okay, but how, but
she's
so
not
who,
black in her consciousness.
Which brings me to the original question, Damon. Who defines blackness?
We define blackness. We define it.
Yeah, I'm asking you now,
Damon. Who defines blackness? Because what did Joe Biden say? He said, well, if you support Donald Trump, you ain't black. And a whole lot of black people who supported Donald Trump got very upset with him because he was making a statement about the definition of blackness. And that is the point. Now, yeah, whether I'm tongue in cheek or whether or not I'm a little annoyed at a Candace Owens, yeah, somebody could say, yeah, she needs to have her black card taken. But whether she is doing it to monetize her political views or whether she truly believes them, I don't know. But I am, as a black person on this political side of the rail, I don't believe I have a right to question her blackness. I can question her politics.
No. Let Damon answer that. But I disagree with that.
Okay. Well, I've got a lot of people on. Raheem, thank you so much. Damon, real quick, your thoughts about that.
There's a distinction between aesthetic blackness and cultural blackness. Aesthetic blackness is, are you, you know, we see, okay, you're black or whatever. And cultural blackness is definitely a thing. And we can't deny that it's a thing because there are other cultures, other ethnicities that have their own, you know, their own language, their own, you know, way of communicating with each other, their own, you know, histories, their own, I don't know, just their own zeitgeisty dynamics that are unique to that culture. You know, Italians have it, Irish Americans have it, Chinese Americans have it, Black Americans have it. And I think that when you bring up a person like Candace Owens, I know, yeah, she'll be black until the day she dies. That is true.
But is she not culturally black?
But I think that when you are a black person who does things that harm black people, right? Then that question of whether you're culturally black is a little trickier. You know, and yes, you could be black and like anime, be black and be a nerd, be black and be in the science, be black and be in the cicadas. Whatever pulls your boat, that, you know, if there's 40 million black Americans, there's 40 million ways to be a black American, right? But when you start to have a person who intentionally does things that are going to have a disproportionate harm on black people, right, then the cultural blackness question is a bit more complicated because, again, if you were culturally black, then you would recognize that these things that you're doing are harming the very same community that you claim to be a part of.
So here's another question for you about that. Can you be culturally black and date outside of your race?
Yeah, definitely. Now, you can date outside of your race, but if you are, you find love is where you find it, that's, you know, love is love, all that, you know, post-race, whatever. Right. But if
he said post-racial,
but, yeah, whatever.
You want to bring Barack Obama in this now?
If you're a person who exclusively dates outside of your race, like you are a black person, but you only date white people or you only date Latino people, I mean, then that gets a little trickier. You know, it's like, what are you trying to communicate about yourself, about your blackness, about your feelings about black people if you're making this choice over and over and over again and excluding black people from this choice? And so I think the question is not so much, are these people, you know, who made these decisions culturally black? The question is, do they want to be culturally black? Because when you make decisions like that, and when you do things that harm black people, then I think you're making a choice. You're making a choice to be ostracized, to be outside of the community. And so if you're making that choice, you shouldn't be surprised if the community's like, okay, well, you made that choice, so all right, bye. Yeah.
Let me go to Donald, calling from Massachusetts. Donald, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold. I'm originally from uptown Northwest, but I moved to Massachusetts many moons ago. But I respectfully disagree with your guest, Damon. I think he's an intelligent man from his speaking, but I think his viewpoint is a little questionable because just from what he just said, I mean, if a person, I've been married 38 years to a black woman.
Congratulations.
But if a person chose a person of another race, that's their prerogative. That doesn't take away that black card or that black this culturally, et cetera.
I didn't say that.
But you kind of insinuated if you chose that over and over again, then it's something internal that's saying you're trying to get away from being black or something.
What I'm saying is that there's a difference between having a partner of another race. And again, this happens frequently. You know, there's a difference between that and being like, you know what, I am completely excluding black people from my romantic options. I have no eyes for black people whatsoever. There is something wrong with that if you're a black person. And there's no argument that you could make that will convince me otherwise. If you make that choice over and over and over and over again, there is something wrong with that.
And I think you are missing some points that those people that you mentioned that don't get ostracized, all the movie stars and people of that level, yeah, they're not going to. We're in America. We praise those people. It's people that are on the ground level that get that type of reaction if they try to present themselves in an intellectual manner, not even intellectual manner, but being able to speak correctly and being able to not act, quote-unquote, black, etc. So I think to say it's not an issue in our society, in our culture, I think is wrong. And last point I'd like to make, for instance, let's say Condoleezza Rice. Now, I'm an independent. I'm not a Republican, but people like her, we ostracize. And I think we should have spent more time speaking on her qualities that got her to that point. But instead, what do? Oh, you're Uncle Tom because you're in a Republican, you know, party. That's one of our downfalls, in my view, but that's my view.
Donald, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Rico, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I wanted to bring up a point about who can define, who has the right to say you're black or not black. My case is I'm Puerto Rican. But if you see me walking down the street, that's a black man. Some of my best friends from the South, we talk about matters of race. Others tell me, you don't know what it is to be black because you're Puerto Rican. But when I walk into a store, they treat me like a black man. When I walk down the street, when I'm in a meeting, I'm a black man. It's only when I open my mouth and you detect the accent that differentiates me. But on top of that, no matter what, my skin is black and I get treated as such. So who gets to define? If you go to the Dominican Republic, they're not saying they're black. They'll say they're Dominicans, not black. I don't agree with that, but that's their culture. So who has the right to define what is black?
You know, I agree with that because I remember the very first time I went to, you know, to the Dominican Republic and you see, you know, the brothers walking around there. If you just look at them, they could be some guys walking around Northeast D.C.,
correct.
Because they look like me or Prince George's County or Alexandria.
Yes, I am not black.
Until they open their mouths and it's, you know, and it's all, you know, it's all Spanish. And so, you know, I think looks certainly may play a part, but as it relates to, you know, the body of, you know, this particular conversation and how we interact with each other, because we are not monolithic as it relates to our politics, our geography, our education, our economics. You know, Black people come in all shades. They come from all places. Their experiences are very, very different. And the point that we were making, you know, earlier, Damon, is that for everyone who was as fortunate as yourself and as thick-skinned as yourself to endure the teasing and to realize that your athletic prowess and your intellect were going to remain intact and to allow you to become the great brain and culture critic and author that you are now, there are nine others who were not as fortunate, who were not as blessed to be in that space. And I think that is something that we need to do to definitely be better. Just something to think about. Damon Young, thank you so much for being on this program. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I really, really appreciate your time. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, August 6th, for News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend. Black.